VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock, and this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here with what's left of our money for the hour, as usual, and hope you're all willing to join us and stick around for a while. The regulars, thanks so much for always being here. And if you're new, and we know there are new people coming all the time, partly because whenever we meet somebody, we beat them up a little bit and say you have to listen to the show. So that works for us.
True. Yeah. We'll get a lot of listeners that way.
Yep. Anyway, gosh, lots to talk about today, as luck would have it.
No doubt about it.
And like Angela before us, I'm kind of in a good mood, too, for reasons that you are not going to understand, because I know that the prevailing thoughts and feelings of investors everywhere are very negative right now after what happened this week. I'm going to try to cheer you up a little bit. The news is not nearly as bad as you think it is.
Oh, are you saying the sky is not falling?
I am saying that not only is the sky not falling, it might be turning a little bluer or preferably a little greener real soon. Hmm. And I don't make that up just because I'm the cockeyed optimist that I always tell you that I am. There's actually quite a bit behind it. So that will be interesting when we get into the market wrap. I look at this show as talking about a lot about the market and economics. Now, the question to me, from me, is always the same when you get into this stuff. Is it possible to talk about economics and not have everybody turn off the radio because it's so boring? I promise you, it is, and we will. And what you hear, some of which will surprise you until you really think about it. And then I don't think you're going to be nearly as surprised. So we'll get into that after the usuals. Anyway, lines are open. Our first goal here, of course, is to bring you some up-to-date current things that are going on and our opinions about the market. But the real part of a live show is you, the callers. It's most important to us that callers will go to the head of the line, because the show is really done for you. Would answer any of your questions with regard to investing or personal finance. And as if to prove my point, good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
You know, I thought the Three Stooges died years ago, but they've been resurrected in the form of Robert Lighthizer, Peter Navarro, and Trump. I mean, this is, I don't know, who do you think is Mo, Larry, and Curly?
I might talk you out of that before this day is over.
Okay, well, go ahead and try, because these guys are a disaster. I mean, and I voted for Trump, and I support him, and I'll vote for him again, but this is a disaster, especially Peter Navarro. I mean, every time he gets on TV, the market tanks. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
That is true. Is that due to Peter Navarro, or is that due to the media?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, he's hard line. I mean, he's a hardliner again, and
yes,
so is Lighthizer,
yep,
against China.
Yep.
And I understand, you know, things have to change, you know, especially with intellectual property theft. I understand that. But, I mean, this is all causing so much uncertainty in the market, and we know what happens when there's uncertainty like this. Everybody just hits the sell button.
Well, you're introducing the show as well as I could, because that's what it's going to be about today.
For sure.
I'm holding in my hands right now an article called China Swings into Action on Trade as Tariff Man Trump Ups Pressure. It has already begun. The agreement made in Buenos Aires is already being implemented. And you're not going to hear that very often because it doesn't fit the narrative of the mainstream media. But it is happening. There are two things going on, and I'll get into this more after the call, but there are two things going on that are fake news right now, and they're the things that are driving the markets. And when you put it all together, it's hard to be too pessimistic. Yeah, when you're dealing with someplace like China, you have a lot of inertia of rest. It's been the same since basically 20 years ago we let them into the WTO, and they've been ripping us and everybody else off ever since. There is no incentive to change inertia of rest. In fact, recency bias, or whatever you want to call it, says, why would they do anything? Well, again, Newtonian physics. To start a stagnant body moving requires force. They're exhibiting force on China right now, and China understands that the drawbacks for them far exceed the drawbacks for us. So what do? You salvage the best deal you can. And that's what we've just started to do this week. So that's why I am not as pessimistic as you are, and I hope to bring you down off the cliff a little bit before the day is over.
Well, I mean, I'm actually not overly pessimistic, Steve, but I'm just very concerned because the market has got so much uncertainty hanging out there. I think the Fed is going to be neutered, and we're going to see that pretty soon.
I think it's already been done.
Yeah.
Very possibly.
So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates coming down, housing stocks going up, that's good. That'll keep us from going into a recession, I think. When people
listen to the rest of the show, they're going to swear that I set you up for this call. You just introduced it as well as it could be done.
For sure. And Chuck, I owe you a gift card. I just picked it up in a very shady deal in the parking lot. Ken Bales, our sponsor, met me in the parking lot and gave it to me. I've been waiting on that. So I will get that out to you this week.
Yeah, don't think we forgot you at Christmas time. That wouldn't happen.
Thank you. But anyway, I hope things get better, and hopefully we'll have a Santa Claus rally. But, the other thing I watch very closely, and you probably don't, is the VIX.
We do.
We watch it. Yeah.
Believe me.
It was 24 and a half yesterday, I believe, something like that.
Yeah. And I think what we need, and this may happen on Monday, I don't know, but it would be the best thing that could happen, and that is the futures are locked down 500 points, the VIX hits 30, and that would flush out a lot of people, and then we could get a decent rally that hopefully would be sustainable. But we haven't had one of those textbook flush-out rallies where the VIX goes over 30 in ages.
You're absolutely right. Completely
agree with you. The average investor isn't scared. It's quite scared enough yet.
Right. Which means the likelihood is there'll be one more dip before the rally, and you are dead on with all of your reasoning. It's nothing to fear. That's the part that I hope to convince people today. Let it happen, ride through it, and don't try to time it because you will be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, but I tell you, Apple going down 6 the other day at 168 was very worrisome. I mean, that was just awful.
Well, they're a transitional company that's not giving credit for the transition they're going through. Everybody thinks they're a product selling company. Well, now they're becoming a service selling company, and you're not going to see the hardware sales being quite as big, which means the gross revenues aren't going to be bad. I don't care about that. I want to know how much money they're going to make. And the market will settle on a price, but I don't think it's found it just yet. Facebook, much different reasoning. All the fangs are getting hurt, but for various and sundry different reasons. It'll reverse, but we'll talk more about it. I really appreciate your call, as always. Always share your opinions with us. We're coming up on a break, so I got to let you go. And keep listening, see what we can do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. All right, after the break, we're going to get more into this. Not only what happened, but where do we go from here and why do we go there? And I'll tell you all about the dishonesty in the media that's causing a lot of this. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we have a trivia question from Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, Area 904, of course, 636-7888. Susie Orman, remember her? She used to be everywhere. Now she's less everywhere, but she's still around. She retired early to an island, and she's actually a deep-sea fisher person because she can.
Sounds good to me.
No kidding. Susie Orman says that a person needs how many million dollars to retire before age 60? Pretty simple question, and a lot of people think she's right. I'm one of them. All right, Adam, let's get into the market wrap. This one is so complicated that we're going to do every possible thing we can do to simplify it and put it in layman's terms, and I want to tell you why we're not worried.
Okay. It's been an interesting year, that's for sure.
It has indeed.
It's almost been a mirror image of last year, or reverse mirror image, and it's interesting because this week was also a mirror image in reverse of last week. So last week we gained, 1,252 points on the Dow. This week it dropped 1,150. The NASDAQ was up 391 last week, down 361 this week, and this one's pretty amazing. The S&P was up 127 points last week. It was down 127 points this week.
The market giveth and the market
pretty
taketh
remarkable.
Away. Now, you used a word last week. I remember it very well. You said the market was overbought.
Yeah.
Guess what it is this week?
Yeah, oversold. So yeah, that was a quick flip.
And listeners, remember, we always tell you this. The market goes wherever it's going to excess and then comes back.
Yeah, of course. And right now we're seeing a lot of you really have to wonder. I don't know if there's any way to gauge it, but you have to wonder how much of this volatility is caused by algorithms. Because when those computers start trading and the algorithm tells them to sell, they sell, and they sell in mass. So
they're indiscriminate. They have no feelings.
No. So they just do what they're programmed to do. And that's why we're seeing such violent swings in the market. I'm not 100% sure. I can't prove it. But
this brings up one of my little subtopics for today. The unthinkable has happened. We agreed with Cramer 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening.
That like more than my lifetime average of for a year. And all he said was the sell-off was caused by a computer-driven foot race. And he's saying it is the computers of the hedge fund people who, as I said, have no emotions whatsoever. They are programmed that when it hits this, boom, you're out.
Yeah.
They're also programmed the other way.
I was just going to say, that's the only good thing about it is that when the buying happens, it will happen equally as fast. And we kind of saw that last week. So a lot of times the market goes down in big chunks and then comes back very, very slowly. But last week it came back in very quick. I mean, it was sudden. So
very sudden. And it was unannounced, as it always is.
Exactly.
By the way, I would like to put out a special thank you to our departed president, George H.W. Bush, 41, for allowing the market to close on Wednesday. This market needed a breather worse than anything I've seen in a long time. So
definitely.
You know, lots of reasons not to be happy about his passing, but I'm going to give him one last hurrah.
So one of the big reasons that this week the market dropped, or at least what the talking heads were saying, is that the global economy is cooling off. We're in a trade war. You've heard all of this stuff on whatever news channel you watch. It doesn't matter. And then we had a trade deficit report that was issued this week. And the headline number is the one that always gets reported, as it should. But it was the highest it's been, $55.5 billion, which is going in the wrong direction. So President Trump is trying to bring that number down. It went up. But the thing that they don't talk about is that the total volume of goods being imported and exported from our country is another number that's in that report. So they just add the two numbers together, imports and exports. It hit an all-time high last month. Now, how is that possible if the global economy is cooling and we're in the midst of a trade war? Why would we be
shipping out
and importing all that stuff? Yeah, and
recent strength in the dollar is negative for exporters.
In the past year, exports are up 6.3% and imports are up 8.5%. Does that sound like a global economy in the midst of a trade war? I don't think so.
Not to this guy.
And then you have to take on top of that we're no longer importing the volume of oil that we used to from the Middle East. So that was
factor. $700 billion a year.
That's a factor in that equation as well. So we've replaced that import with other imports. So we're really, we are importing at an amazing rate right now. And I think that's all part of the consumer-driven economy. And it tells me that we may not be buying as much from China, but we're buying it from somewhere. I mean, maybe it's coming from Vietnam. I'm seeing that more and more.
And did you notice one of the commodities that everybody was up in arms about. And one of the excuses the media was using for Trump's GDP numbers was when they accelerated the shipments of soybeans because of the tariff. Well, guess who's starting to buy soybeans again? China.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that incredible?
That's right. So the Dow and the S&P are now negative on the year. The NASDAQ held on barely to a gain, 1%. But it's also been declining faster than the other indexes. So it was up a lot higher. It's now almost pulled even, still a little bit positive. And the really bad part about that is that tech is just under a microscope right now by the regulators. And we're seeing really heavy downward pressure on tech stocks. Now, is it warranted? I don't know. What do you think?
More of an ethical question than a financial one.
For some of the companies. I mean, I don't think Apple's been accused of anything yet.
No, they're just, as I said earlier, they're just in this transition. The company is, remember, it was a growth company.
Yeah.
Apple was the ultimate growth company for, well, what year did Jobs come back? Since that moment on,
yeah.
He started innovating. In fact, he invented a whole form of marketing whereby he would tell you that you needed something that didn't exist, and then he'd invent it and sell it to you.
And then you would want it and want more of it.
And then he'd tell you that he can make it even better.
For it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the hell of it was there.
He was right.
He was absolutely right, and he kept doing it. Well, that all growth companies, as they get bigger and bigger and bigger, transition into value companies, meaning they start to distribute money in the form of dividends. And you saw it with Microsoft. You've seen it with Apple now. That's not going to have the same kind of growth. So if you're valuing a company like that on its growth potential, you are too late. You better move on to a new, smaller company. It's very easy to double the size of a small company. It's almost impossible to double the size of an Apple or a Microsoft or something like that. So all of a sudden, it moves into a new category for investors, people who want to get some return on things other than appreciation. So that's where Apple is, and that's where Apple's going to stay. And now it's going to have to find its own footing in the market.
But what are you going to hear about? You're going to hear about the reports that all their suppliers are cutting their production. And
absolutely.
That they're not selling any iPhone 10s, and that's going to be the story. And it has been the story. It's been very persistent. It makes me want to buy more,
yes.
But that's just me.
Okay, so two things were in the news this week. One was the China deal.
Yep.
And as I've already pointed out, that's already changing. Fake news. Just like that.
I mean, we are having a lot of tension with China right now. That is
well,
not
absolutely
fake news.
Absolutely we are. But when Trump cut the original deal on Saturday night, on Monday morning, market shot straight up because we made a deal. Tuesday morning, they had thought about it and said, well, we don't know what the deal is.
Yeah.
Well, he told you what the deal is. Listen, people. So that's, I put it in fake news category. But the other one, and probably the bigger one, because it had a bigger reaction on the market, was the so-called inverted yield curve. Now, this is where we talk economics, and I got to make this real simple.
Yeah.
If I'm going to lend you money for a month, I might charge you 1%, 0.5%, whatever it is, for using my money but returning it pretty quickly. But if I'm going to lend you money for 30 years, for instance, on a house mortgage, you're not getting it at 1%.
No, right now I think Angela and Howard said you're going to pay about 4.75.
Right. That is a normal yield curve. Short-term rates are low. Long-term rates are higher. An inverted yield curve, which happens every now and again, means short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. Well, I've pulled up no less than half a dozen stories this week from the so-called media that said the yield curve inverted. No, it didn't.
No, it did not.
Here's the yield curve. Short-term rates are running about 2.37, and 30-year rates are running about 3.16 on treasuries. That is a normal yield curve.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they say this? Well, for a brief moment, 3 to 5-year bonds got a little bit less pricey than short-term bonds. That's a dip in the curve, in the center of the curve. It's not an inversion.
A portion of the curve.
A portion of it. And that it just a dip. Higher than that was the long-term. There is no inverted yield curve. There is not likely to be an inverted yield curve. If there is, the saying goes, that means a recession is coming. Well, I got some news for everybody out there. A recession is coming anyway.
That's true. And also, it is a predictor, but it is a way, way leading indicator.
18 months, 24 months, 30 months out. It's a fairly good, but not perfect, predictor.
Almost perfect.
A recession does not require an inverted yield curve to begin. An inverted yield curve does not always mean a recession is coming. Yes, it's a good predictor. Is it a panic situation? Well, I'll tell you one thing. If I see a recession coming in 2 years, I'm not selling my stocks today.
Nope, the biggest gains come at the end of the bull market.
Exactly. And I've got a few more little interesting statistics after the break. We will talk just a little more economics. Don't be afraid. It's all got a reason, as it always does, and that reason is simply to ease the fears of some people who are out there on the ledge right now. And quite frankly, I can see why. So we'll try to do our best to ease that a bit. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And I want to remind everyone, lines are open, 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Trivia question is out there. Susie Orman says a person needs how many million dollars to retire before age 60? And that number is greater than one. I've just narrowed it down.
Okay.
And I agree with her. You retire with $1 million at age 59 or so, and considering it's very likely that each person is going to spend over $280,000 on medical expenses between that day and the last day on Earth, that speaks for needing money. That's just, I get getting junk calls on my phone all day long. Must be Christmas time. Anyway, Adam, the jobs report was portrayed in the media as dismal.
Yeah.
Now, this is obviously because, well, we don't want Trump to do anything good.
Well, it wasn't dismal.
It was not.
It was really boring.
I'll give it that.
The jobs reports have been pretty exciting lately. This one was not. Do you want to take that caller?
Sure. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
I wanted to logic my way through your trivia question.
All right.
Okay.
So you said someone age 60, so no Social Security.
Before 60.
So I'm also going to speculate they probably have pretty expensive taste because they're thinking of that much younger. So I'm going to say $100,000 a year. Use the 4% Bingdon method. That means you need to have $2.5 million. So $2.5 million. But you said that, do I have to round that to the millions?
Yeah, preferably.
Three.
It is an even number.
What was that, Marshall?
Three, you say?
I say three. My wife is sitting here disagreeing with me, but I will be the official, and I will crow if she was right.
Does she think it should be higher or lower?
Lower.
Lower? No, you are low.
Remember, this is according to one person.
Right.
So,
although it's been verified, there's a pretty good substantiation argument to be made in one of the articles I read today. And besides that, I agree anyway. No, that's actually low. How about that? Keep working, fella.
Well, I'm going to keep on that, but I did have one thing I wanted to drop on you. For those people who are not concerned about China, Michael Pillsbury is a guy that's been on TV a fair amount.
Dr. Pillsbury.
If you read his resume, you say, this is a guy who really gets it with respect to China.
Yep.
And what was it called? The 100 Years War?
Mm-hmm.
If you read that book, you realize just how corrupt D.C. is with respect to China.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Anybody who doesn't think whatever we have to swallow hard and do to put the brakes on China has to be done, they've got to read the book.
Yep, I absolutely agree. And probably the other noted expert is Gordon Chang. And the two of them are often seen together agreeing with each other.
Yep.
They are fantastic.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the call and the insight. And now you know you got to keep working, right?
Yep.
$3 million is enough as long as you're old enough. But if you're getting out early.
It'll never get there.
Well, you know, the unreachable goal might be out there for most of us. That's why I'm not retiring. Take care of yourself.
The goal is to hit my wife's expectations. That's the unreachable goal.
Well, I think I just elevated them.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Bye. All right, on the jobs front, Adam pointed out, he used a wonderful word for it. I used a different word. I said it was a Goldilocks job report. He said it was boring, and we mean exactly the same thing.
Yeah, the point is when the jobs report beats expectations or blows it away, then the economy looks great. But right now that's a bad thing in the markets because they don't want the Fed to raise interest rates in December. So they didn't want to come in too low either because then it looks like the economy's tanking and maybe they've overraised and then they might sell off on that news. But it came in at 155,000. Which is just about the perfect number. It gives the Fed an excuse to not go up in December if that's what they choose to do. But it's not a terrible number either. So it's the sell-off on Friday was not caused by that jobs report number.
No, and ADP came out 177. That's the private company survey. And the household survey by the BLS came in at 233. And another thing I pointed out to Adam, the unadjusted job growth for this year to date, that's 11 months, shows that 4,507,000 more people are working than they were on December 31st last year.
And that brought the total this year for the 13th record under Trump. It's 156,795,000 people are employed in the U.S. So that is another record. So the economy actually looks pretty good. There was other good news in that report as well, that the wage growth is trending up, adding 0.2% in November, and that's in line. It annualized, that comes out to over 3%. Hours worked are also up in the past year by 1.7%, so total earnings are up about 4.8% annualized.
And
not bad.
That is a nice thing. And now remember, you always have to factor over that. The people are retiring, 10,000, 12,000 of us a day, turning 65, younger people coming in. It's actually an astounding number. All right, a little more on the yield curve and the Fed, and then I promise right after the break we're going to talk about required minimum distributions, which is part two of my tax program, things that you should do and be wary of. There is a small group of brilliant people, economists and such, in New York. They go by the name of Bespoke, and Adam and I read them religiously. In fact, we were discussing in the last break if we can find any political bias in their work, and neither of us can.
No,
this is the most
very neutral,
right down the middle, absolute research that I can ever find. Well, here's what they said today about the yield curve. The Fed has been raising rates since December 2015 and rather consistently since the end of 16. That's called tightening at the Fed. There's been a steady move up now, and there was going to be a continuing move into next year. Now the Fed has backed off on that a little bit, and as I pointed out last week, the Fed has absolutely no obligation to the stock market or to the people. They have an obligation to Trump only in that he can not hire the chairman again, but there is no obligation politically of the Fed to do anything. Their mission statement does not mention it anywhere. I've got it right here. Anyway, the market is now down to pricing in only one rate hike in 2019 and no more this year. Well, that's a dramatic turn of events since we were at about 90% sure just a month or two ago that they would raise this month. Now, I don't think they should. I don't think they need to. You know, Adam and I have been proponents of having the interest rates higher. But right now, it's been a little too fast, and we need the world to kind of level off a little bit. So after the Fed became hawkish this fall, and if anything got carried away into the end of the year, the tone shifted a bit. Now the word they use is it's becoming more dovish. But that's not what really matters. What really matters is what it means. And I highlighted one sentence out of this that should make everybody listening breathe easier. Here it goes. In fact, from the perspective of historical returns going back to 1990, The current level and flattening action in the curve is actually a positive signal for equity market returns. Again, the curve is getting a little flatter, and it is in the process of flattening a little more, not inverting, flattening. This is a positive sign for equity investors. On average, forward returns are in the mid-teens over the following year, while the subsequent month, 3 month, and year are all positive on average for similar periods of curve shape and flattening basis. That means that all this stuff you heard over the last week about the inverted yield curve is not only fake news, the conclusion is wrong too. How about that?
All right.
So be careful what you listen to. If you want to know the truth, tune into the show at 10 o'clock every Saturday morning. We'll give you the best thinking, not only from us, but from the best gurus that we can find out there.
There was other good news this week, too.
Okay, shoot.
The ISM manufacturing and non-manufacturing indexes both beat expectations by quite a bit and are near their cycle highs. So that is...
Doesn't sound like a recession to me.
They're both hovering near 60, which anything over 50 signals expansion. Right. We're expanding like crazy right now.
Yep. All right. Taxes part two coming up right after the break. Required minimum distributions, a very important topic for people of a certain age. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
So you need to find...
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And on the line we have Tim. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's up
morning,
today?
Gentlemen. This is Anthracite Tim. I just wanted to say the sun's coming up tomorrow. The United States and China will probably get things square away because they really need each other. And the hip's on the mend. And I'll listen off the air for the RMB's questions because I want to hear something about that.
Want to take a trivia shot?
On the Susie Orman thing?
Yes. How many million you need? You know it's more than three.
Three and a half.
Too low.
Even number, right?
Yeah, I'll give you a guess on four, and it's too low.
Wow.
Yeah, she's...
Save up.
She's very conservative with her calculations, I think.
But that really that puts you in a very elite group of folks in this country.
For sure.
Her point is to keep working.
there's a certain element of motivation there.
Absolutely, okay? There is. And don't make dumb decisions on retiring. So, yeah, she does have a point. All right, I'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into RMDs. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Sure. Thanks, Sam.
I'm still chuckling a little bit. China sells us more than we sell to China. If we put tariffs on our stuff, it hits them harder than if we get tariffs from them on their stuff. Mm-hmm. And that ratio is about 4 to 1. Now, China's economy is not bigger than ours. So the four times, no, not yet. And they have a lot more people, but their economic impact is very similar to ours, actually. Mm-hmm. So it four times impacts them, not four times more, but a multiple of four times more. Yes, they will capitulate. But as we've said for the last several months, they have to find a way to save face because in their culture, it's critical. Not really that different with us. Do you think Trump doesn't want to save face too?
Oh,
absolutely.
Of course.
Does. Everybody.
Of course, we just call it something else.
Yeah. Just a really, really good negotiation where I have the oldest expression in the world. I made it up and I'm pretty old.
Okay.
It says, you can always tell a good business deal because everybody walks out of the room smiling. You can always tell a good political deal because nobody walks out of the room smiling. Think about it. Required minimum distributions. Last week we talked about buying a dividend. That's something that non-retirement account investors have to worry about with mutual funds in December. And you can cost yourself some taxes by doing something that is not paying attention to what's going on with your funds. RMDs are different now. We're talking about people with retirement accounts. Required minimum distribution means that when you're 70 and a half, you have to start taking money out of those, unless, of course, it's a Roth, an uninherited Roth for that matter, but now we're getting picky. Why? Well, all these years you've been putting money in there and deducting them from your current income for tax purposes. Now that you're 70 and a half, Uncle Sam wants a payback. This financial planner has no problem with that. I think that's a wonderful deal, that we can take our taxes over a long period of time and reduce them every year and postpone all of that until we're 70 and a half. I have absolutely no problem.
Especially and when you're 70 and a half, you normally don't have other sources of income. So right. It hits you less financially exactly. Later.
All in all, this system was designed very well, I think. So the M in our MD means minimum. That is prescribed by law. And it's a simple little formula. You take your balance at the end of the year divided by a factor that is printed in a chart by the IRS. When you're 70 and a half that year, you divide it by 27.4, and that tells you the amount. Now, nowhere in the law do they limit you to that. That is a minimum, not a maximum. It's just a minimum. You can take anything you want, but it's fully taxable. I don't have a problem with that. What happens if you miss? That is a problem. Failure to take any RMD is punishable by IRS with a 50% penalty. 50%.
And that's 50% of what you were supposed to take out. So if you had a $10,000 RMD and you don't take it, you owe $5,000 in taxes to the government.
Not to mention that when you do take it, because you have to, that's going to be taxed too.
Yeah, you have to take the regular taxes off. So by the time you're done with that transaction, you might have $2,000 left.
It is incumbent upon owners of retirement accounts, their custodians, and their financial people to make sure that happens. Now, are there exceptions? Of course, there are exceptions to almost anything. What happens if you don't want to take it this year? Well, you have one out. If this is the year.
Maybe. Only if you're born.
If you have to be born at the right time of the year. In the year you're 70 and a half, you can still delay your first one up to March 31st of the next year, but then you have to take another one by year end. But it's convenient. If you're working until 70 and then you're retiring, you'll have earned income during your year when you turn 70, mm-hmm. might be 70 and a half also. That goes away when you retire. So you might want to push that first required minimum out to the next year and then take another one because it just levels off your income. That's kind of a rare thing because not many people retire from working at age 70, yeah, but there are some.
We actually have a client doing that this year, or next year, I guess.
Yeah, we've seen them, no doubt about it. All right, so here's some things to remember. The exception for going into next year is often missed, either by the date or the fact that they just forgot this year. I'll get around to telling you about that, too, what to do about that if you have fallen victim to that. Now, the calculations are pretty much the same here if you postpone it or not, because it's always based on the year-end account value. So that's not a real issue either. All right, account owners wishing to minimize their RMDs can use some, not tricks, but provisions of the code. One is called a Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract, or a QLAC. What a QLAC does is it allows you to buy an annuity inside your retirement account. The annuity has a return of zero, which seems rather strange that people would buy one. But what it does is it allows you not to take an RMD on that particular amount of money until such date as you decide to do it, as long as that date is not past your 85th birthday. So if you're retiring at 71 and still working and you don't want to take your RMDs because you really don't need them, you don't want to pay the taxes, you can put some of your money into a QLAC and defer that for a while until after you're working. They're easy to do. We have worked with people who did them, and it works fine. There is no return, but after that, they will pay out your RMDs from the QLAC portion, and they will do it on the basis that should you not make it to the end of withdrawing all your money, it will go to your beneficiary. Mm-hmm. So all in all, great deal. How about a qualified charitable distribution? One of the things that was actually true about the tax package that they advertised in 2017 and eventually passed was that many, many people are no longer going to itemize their deductions for their taxes. If you fall into that group, and more people, but we see this a lot in our day jobs, more and more people aren't doing it anymore. Well, what happens under traditional rules, if you are a charitable-minded person, you will take your own money and give to the charity. That will cause your income you have to take money out of your RMD. It'll cause your income to go up. You give it to the charity. That's a tax deduction. Well, what if you're not taking tax deductions? We have a way. The qualified charitable distribution takes all or part of your RMD with a $100,000 annual maximum, sends it directly to the charity. What's the upshot of that? You do not get a 1099. Your income does not go up. You do not get a tax deduction that you wouldn't use anyway. So the entire amount of your QCD is now tax-free income to you, even without itemizing deductions. And this one is being used more and more. We are deep in several of them right now. All right, how about inherited IRAs and RMDs? If an IRA owner or 401k owner dies during a particular year and has already started or needs to by law start taking RMDs, that owner or the owner's estate has to take that RMD that year. So before the money is distributed to the beneficiary, it has to have the RMD in there. Again, there are penalties for doing this wrong. But the next year, no matter what you've inherited, if you are the lucky recipient of an account that was inherited, you will have to start taking RMDs, even if it's a Roth. They want that money into the taxable zone. Can't really blame them. Now, if you're a spouse rather than, say, a child of the inherited account, there are a couple of different things you can do, and they're all up to you. And that's where I'm going to start next week, because we're pretty much out. Susie Armand says you got to have $5 million, and there's a pretty good case for it. Of course, there are always exceptions. People with large pensions and railroad retirements and all that, they can get away with less. But if you want out early, be prepared. That's the bottom line. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week at the same time. This is the Dan Wee Financial Hour.